It is Saturday, February 6, 2010, 10:06 a.m. on the central coast of California. Today on Geek Speak, Geek News, and a discussion with Dave Petrero. It's time now for Geek Speak. The bandwidth for geekspeak.org is provided by GNI, gnihosting.com. Welcome to Geek Speak, bridging the gap between geeks and the rest of humanity. I'm your host, Lyle Troxell. Please keep in mind the views expressed during Geek Speak are not necessarily those of KUSP. The theme today is by Dave Petrera, and with us today we have Dave Petrera. Dave is a former games development at Atari Games, where he worked on such titles as Primal Rage, T-Mech, Guardians of the Hood, and Pit Fighter. Dave specializes in digitalized video games. These are the games you played at the arcades in the early 90s, before the advent of Xbox and PS3 and such. My name's Lyle Troxell. In the air with me, I have Ben Jaffe. He's a slacker. Morning.
Morning.
We also have Al Luckow. Al Luckow is a new media architect. Good morning.
Hello, everybody.
And as I just explained, Dave is here with us as well. Good morning, Dave.
Good morning.
Dave, we're going to be doing Geek News. You're welcome to join in the discussion as we chat. Let me move this monitor so I can see you. Ah, beautiful.
There, yeah, thank you.
Unlike you.
Oh, my God, put it back.
Sorry about that. I've got a face for radio. Okay, so let's start the Geek News with Mr. Al Lucca.
Yeah. Well, I wish there was some way that we could do like a little effect, but I'll just try it.
Ben?
Worms in space.
Okay,
that was kind of effective.
What worms in space?
Well, it turns out Iran has decided to enter the space race.
And they're putting worms in space.
Well,
we started with monkeys.
Among other things, they've got a couple of things, a rat, two turtles, and some worms. So they have...
Sounds like a bedtime story.
Sounds like a soup.
They have sent these. the test involves a rocket. It's described as the Kassovjar 3. And it's capable of carrying satellites. And in December, Iran said it fired an improved version of it. I don't know if they just decided to send up what was close at hand.
Or like in a swamp area, or turtles.
Whatever was at arm's length. That's kind of interesting. They're entering the whole space thing.
Yeah, and I think we've actually sent earthworms and such to space before. I think that's a pretty...
Yeah.
Common one.
Yeah, space worms.
Yeah,
space worms. They're space worms.
That's a great headline.
Yeah.
But there's a new movie out.
Wormonauts? What would you call a worm?
A worm space nut? I don't even know what Iranian astronauts/cosmonauts would be. Like, every country has their own term for space-traveling humans. Iranauts?
I don't know.
Sounds like a very
complicated... I'm sure they'll come up with a great name. We need another one because
we do.
We only have two names.
What's the Chinese name? I don't even know what that is. Oh, man.
I don't know either. But if you know the Chinese name for an astronaut,
we need to know about it.
Email it or call us so we can be informed.
I won't be able to sleep tonight without finding that out.
Yeah.
Good thing the internet exists. Hey, I didn't mention that GeekSpeak on KSP is supported by Santa Cruz Electronics, offering an extensive selection of computer and electronic parts as well as support services. Santa Cruz Electronics open daily at 2808 SoCal Avenue, online at santacruzelectronics.com. Hey, Mr. Jaffe.
Hey there. So I have some bad news. I don't actually have a really, really great story yet because as at least the geeks in the room know, I literally walked in about 45 seconds before we went on
air. You know, I walked in 4 seconds before that, and I have my news stories.
Wait, you don't cover news stories. Yeah. Hey, can I just host today?
Come on over here.
All right, hold on. Go. Okay, so... I just have a pretty quick one, and then I have a mention of what I was doing yesterday, which is why I'm so late. I'm not late.
You're on time.
Yeah,
you're
right
just,
on time.
Go for it.
Anyway, radio requires preparation, right? Intense. But X2, it's a UK manufacturer, just announced a new tablet, and they named it the iTablet, which is what Apple should have named their product.
I'm assuming they had that
trademarked for a long time? Is that why?
I guess so. Yeah. I mean, I don't know. Mad TV, I think, had iPad. No, they should have. But anyway, and then the thing I was doing yesterday, I was at the San Francisco Digital Showcase and Super Meetup, which was...
That's funny. Al was there, too.
He was there.
Al was there.
Yeah, I ran into Ben, and I didn't even know who was going to be
oh,
there.
Oh, you ran in? Oh, I thought that was someone else.
That was me, yeah.
I didn't recognize you without your hat.
Ben was so, you know, he's so famous that he didn't even... No, he just thought I was another one of the groupies that hang around.
Yeah. Actually,
what's the show?
I just said the name of the show, but it's basically a film users group. Basically, Final Cut. It's a Final Cut users group.
Okay.
I think it's based off of that user group, and then other people also came in. There were Avid was. I think Avid had a presence. A lot of
Avid still around.
Yeah. It is. In fact, they gave away Media Composer last night at this really intense raffle with this really intense guy on stage shouting things at the audience.
Did you get that?
No.
You didn't win?
No, I didn't win. I would have liked to. But anyway, it was fun. And cool. I got to see Al in his salesman role.
Yeah, I was helping out one of my clients.
He was traveling, too.
A booth. And I worked on a lot of his products, so I was in his booth.
I went up to Oakland last night, so we're all kind of in the city area.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Because I was in a digital art show, and it was a blast. The place was packed with the show is called Fun a Day, and basically you do a piece of work every day in January, and then in the early part of February, yesterday.
And you were in it. Show. You were like, yeah, you were one of the artists.
Yeah, it was really cool.
Did you wear black?
I didn't know that.
Did you like to wear black? Turtleneck?
I did wear black, and I had to walk slowly.
Yes.
it was packed. It was just jam-packed. It's the first Friday art show in Oakland, and it's kind of in this strip where a lot of stuff is. Mm. And my piece was giant projection on a wall, which was really cool.
Wow.
Yeah, it's fun to see. But the pieces were so neat. Like, everybody did a kind of different thing. A lot of little paintings or drawings. Somebody made, like, it looked like a wallet every day, but or sketched it and then designed it and then designed a wallet. And there was somebody that had just tons of things that you wouldn't think, oh, that's something I could do every day. And they were really kind of beautiful pieces.
Did they have wine there?
No.
They didn't have wine?
You want to make wine every day?
What kind of art show is it without wine?
You know, it was two-packed. They might have had wine there, but it was probably 200 people in a room that fit 30.
I see.
So... It wasn't. It was like really compressed and a lot of smacking up against.
All right.
All right. Anyway, that was what I did. So we've covered that. Now we're done with yesterday.
Okay.
What else happened in the week, Al?
Let's see. There's a couple things that I was going to mention. Mm-hmm. One of them is this website that is really unusual. It's called Yumi, and it's a new kind of game. And what Yumi is you sign up and you either become a you or you become a me. All right,
and I feel a Laurel and Hardy sketch.
If you're a you, if you're a you,
who's on second?
You would I'm be. If you were you, you signed up to be controlled by somebody else for, I guess it says for a day, and then what happens is somebody logs in and they said, "I want to control somebody," so they ask you to do things and you do them. You know, it has to be legal within the rules of your country, obviously. But you're basically controlling real world characters, and you get to be. There are people who want to be, want to be a character, and then they are controlled. And then if you come on, say I want to be a me, then you are a person that controls these people, and you get them to do all these things. It can be anything as simple as
sending worms into space.
Sending worms into
space. If you have that ability.
I think that's how they got the worms.
If it's legal in your country. You can send a worm into space. But if you become a you, it says you basically become somebody else for a day and see the world through their eyes. It's a really unusual kind. And right now you're thinking, well, this is really
weird.
I don't even get it.
So we could sign up, for example, and I could have you paint my house?
Well, theoretically, that could be part of what you do. I mean, you could,
so long
you could
as
do
it's legal in your country.
But it would be your house, not my house.
It says if you're a me, you will be issued requests to carry out. These may include requests to initiate conversations, purchase items, move chess pieces, or just about anything.
Okay, so the general concept is it's a way of, I mean, it seems like an art social thing to
me. And you're controlling people, and obviously this is weird, but think about it. You're actually playing a game, you're actually controlling the person.
Could I do this? Could I give you my email login information for the day and ask you to get rid of my spam?
Oh, that would be a good one.
I don't know.
That'd be – and so this is – it's really – anytime something cutting edge comes
out. Call your mother or something if you didn't want –
call my mom and say
– call mom, tell them happy birthday.
But you get to do things for other people if you're
I wanna
if you're me.
It. But I'm scared.
So how many people are actually used and how many are me?
Well, it's in beta now. But it's just such a new kind of a gaming experience. There's all these different things happening right now. And right now, you look at this and you say, well, that doesn't, you know. But what will come out of this is a real gaming experience using real people in real life, which is a sort of different than... What's the name of that game that you can be virtual person in?
Second Life.
Second Life. It's like you're not a game. You're not controlling the virtual person. You're actually controlling a real person, and it's rudimentary right now. But I think it's something to watch, something to think about. Like, where are we going with this?
You know, actually, I just got an idea. Maybe I shouldn't say another radio or someone might.
Yeah, you know what? That's an obvious thing that you could do.
What if you were a you and a me at the same time? And you controlled yourself.
What if you had a you account Series with somebody else and a me account, and every commands you were given from the me, you just gave to your you.
That would be like
you'd
be
like a little.
I'm talking about you control yourself as a me.
I do that every day.
I can't control myself now.
Moving on. So we got a call. We got an email from Don Cotrain. His listener says it's a well-known fact that worms in space in Iran are called longonauts.
Longonauts. There we go.
Because they're long.
Yep. I'll go with that.
Is that really why?
That's what he said.
Maybe.
Or because they're short, and it's a play on it.
You heard it here, folks. It'll show up on CNN. Longonauts. And they won't know where they got the word, and it'll be just because somebody called it.
I wonder what the education background is for a longonaut.
It's very intense.
But rigorous physical.
Yeah, they've got to know physics and calculus and everything.
Yeah. Hey, you'll notice that we're playing different themes all the time. And in the middle of the show, we got a really fun one for you, a new song. Also, every week, we put up a little 400-pixel by 400-pixel image of the show. If you're listening to us and you're hearing about worms in space and you're listening to us talk about the things we're talking about and it motivates you to grab Photoshop or some image editing thing and make a 400-pixel by 400-pixel image for our podcast and website, we'd love to get that from you. So please submit away. You're going to say 600 by 600.
I thought it was 640 by 640. That's I usually make them, you know. You guys want to do my job.
One. I know.
Oh, yeah. I wasn't here. So
sometimes you're not here, and I figure, what the heck? Mm-hmm. So we love theme songs, music, create, send it our way, images for the shows. We'd like those to be specified for the show itself. I think a worm in a spacesuit is really the thing today.
It's an easy one today.
Yeah, yeah.
It's got to be good, though.
It's got to be good.
Yeah. Really? Yeah. Yeah, right. It's got to look like you actually put a worm in a spacesuit. Yes.
It could be a Mongolian death worm.
Oh, man. I love that podcast.
What? Yeah.
Mongolian death worms? It's this mythical worm that can shoot lightning from its rear end?
Yeah. It's a long story.
It's beautiful.
It's a Drabblecast original.
But it's a real news story.
Oh, God. That's...
You just went off on it. Oh. Yeah. Listen
that's
to the Drabble. If you don't listen to the Drabblecast and you're listening to Geek Speak, come on. Get your priorities straight.
Right.
Al, let's talk about external hard drives.
Oh, yeah. There's this company. It's a person that's doing these. And it's Etsy is a company that I think makes things for you. But this product is an external hard drive VHS. And what they do is you order a hard drive from them and they build it into an old VHS cassette. Now, for you youngies out there, you used to have to watch a video on this big plastic square thing with two reels inside. And we called that a VHS tape.
I've never heard of that.
Yeah, I know. Well,
it was at the time when, you know, it was all orchards out there.
Yes, yes. It was long ago. We were in covered wagons.
And we had the ability to make digital technology, but we had too many orange groves. So we didn't have facilities to do it. And so we had to do tape.
So these things, they build a hard drive right into it. And it has the case and everything. And the description, the picture they have on their site is Star Wars. So you've got this Star Wars cassette that you have just like laying there. But it's actually a hard drive. It's got a USB connector, you know, goes right into it. Which this is a seriously geeky kind of computer accessory. You know, just carrying around this. It's actually kind of almost security-like if you have a hard drive.
In what way?
Well, you know. If you have a cassette and it looks like this, I mean, literally, it's made into a cassette. So your hard drive is in the cassette.
Right.
So you can't tell that it's a hard drive at all. There's just one little tiny USB plug in it. So it's sort of like a hidden drive.
Yeah.
But
yeah,
it's like also geeky, cool. This would be a good geek gift, you know. You think, oh, Star Wars. and a cassette. Thank you. You know.
You know, I've got one of those flip phones. Do you have a flip phone? Actually, at work,
the flip video.
Flip, yeah.
Yes.
And it's got a little USB thing that pops out the side, and it's kind of big. The problem is sometimes it just doesn't really fit in your setup. Like on this PowerBook, it kind of flops around. I got to put it on a book to make it work.
And it also looks like
it was huge.
It also looks like it break off a little bit.
Yeah, that's what it feels like. So is that the same with
this? It's a plug.
Okay, so it comes out as a string.
Well, it's here.
Oh, it's like that.
Yeah.
Okay.
See, for radio, he just says,
"This is great."
Yeah, I'll just hold it to my microphone.
I love that.
Everybody
on radio.
Everybody
looking
at my microphone.
Use your imagination. Yeah. And it's a plug that just USB plug comes out. You just plug into it. But what a neat little thing.
Absolutely.
You know?
Very cool. Thank you.
Yep.
Ben, I'm sorry I skipped you. I wasn't sure if you were really prepared.
That's okay. I love how you made eye contact with me to just, anyway. But, so there is a story I found. I think last time I was on Geeks Week, I covered another diamond story about when diamonds melt, they actually, they're more condensed, and so their diamond icebergs.
They expand when they freeze.
Yeah, and all of that. Well, more diamond news. We were slicing into this meteorite, and we were using diamond paste to kind of scrub away some stuff. And we actually found that there's some crystals in this rock that are harder than diamonds. Now, sometimes we actually find we find chunks of the rock that are resistant to diamond for various reasons. So that in and of itself is actually not very surprising. But we did actually look at them, and we found that the hold on a second, a new phase of crystalline carbon is what we found, and it's something that has been theorized that and predicted to exist 20-30 years ago. We predicted this, but we've never found it. I don't have that offhand because I read about this. But
phase, I'd say it's another form. Phase is like phases of matter, so this is a form of crystal.
A new polymorph of a crystalline carbon. So I don't know if that would be
interesting.
In the article, they use the word phase in quotes. So I'm not sure
if that's a weird term to use. I mean, I get that different materials operate.
There's matter, there's antimatter, there's this new phase.
No, a phase would be
just don't combine them.
So like buckyballs in their structure. You got graphite, you got diamond, you got buckyballs. Those are three different forms, molecules, stable of carbon, which operate extremely differently.
Yeah.
So you're saying that there's another one that's similar to crystal and similar to the diamond, and that it's a crystal lattice.
Yeah, exactly. But it's not something that we've seen in nature until now.
Right.
So
right.
Very cool. And we don't know exactly how hard they were because they were too small, the pieces that we found in this meteorite. But they're certainly
harder
than diamonds.
Well, it's too small, but I know it's harder than diamond. Well, what is it?
Well,
too small to tell you.
it's like saying, okay, this grain of sand is harder than blah, 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 but we can't really sand down the grain of sand because the sandpaper is made of sand.
this keeps falling out of my hand.
yeah, exactly.
Well, thanks for doing that research.
Yeah, they kept accidentally sanding the tips of their fingertips as they were trying to sand this stuff. Really, research. It's a rough world.
All right, thanks. Al, back over to you, sir.
Mm-hmm.
I'm curious about Nikon camera.
Oh, this is sort of just a mention, and this is you're always trying to program new features into cameras because you got to have 10 zillion
features.
Yeah,
something better than the next person.
You can't possibly just have a camera that's got aperture and shutter control and
right.
That
can't
would be,
have the basic features.
Have
to
have one that checks your blood sugar.
Yeah,
right. Yeah, make sure you're not.
You need everything. Well, Nikon is a good example. They try to put every possible thing in there.
Well, a feature that people use all the time, of course, is the dials that auto sets those settings.
Mm-hmm.
But the other one that's really common is facial detection, so they can do focusing on the faces.
Right,
which is a pretty clever idea.
Yeah, that's a neat idea. Of course, sometimes it doesn't quite work. There's a feature in the new Nikon cameras that stops you from it won't take the picture if you're blinking. But
group shots, it can look at like 15 different
right.
faces, and if someone blinks, it doesn't fire until all the people have their eyes open.
But now there's a little racist issue coming up where they're saying that it doesn't, for Asians, it's not taking their pictures.
For East Asians.
Yes.
Ah.
And they're saying, well, this feature is
you also
bogus.
You also can't take a picture in the sun when people are squinting.
Right.
You know, everybody squints,
right. I know.
It won't
so
work.
It's an example of technology that is, I don't know, maybe missing the mark a little bit.
Yeah.
You know, it's so much... You know,
this is common for cameras
to
actually run into facial differences, mm-hmm. where they're trying to do all this auto detection. It's actually the same with skin tone. The uh-huh. color balances for cameras work better for different skin right. tones.
I know that quite often you see the facial detection, you know, in like your iPhoto when it goes through, and all of a sudden it supposedly detects everybody's face, and then if it knows the person, it puts their name, and if it doesn't, it says, who's this? And quite often if you have, you know, chocolate chip cookies in the picture, a little square who's on the this? Cookies says, who's this?
Oh my gosh, there's people on our table.
Well, that's, you know, so, you know.
Frank, don't eat that. It's a person.
There's a point, you know, when you just, maybe, you know, maybe it's enough, you know.
Yeah, maybe it was enough features.
Yeah.
This could never be enough.
Yeah.
Technology mm-hmm. marches on.
Just a small mention.
Thanks. Mm-hmm. What's up with the Milky Way, Ben?
Well, I take public transit almost everywhere except for today.
In the Milky Way?
This guy, this research fellow from Harvard, Samuel Arbisman, has come up with this map, this public, it says the Milky Way Transit Authority. And it has a whole. Actually, I'm just going to turn this around and show you.
See, no, you show me pictures. It It doesn't help the internet.
That's great.
That's great.
Yeah,
it looks like a tube, the London tube.
It looks like the London tube system diagram
or
the
New York and,
BART system or something like that. And you know, they're saying like, well, if you want to get from point A to point B, then you know, if you just go in a straight line, you have to go through this really bad neighborhood where there's a supernova going on or something. You know,
so it's directions for getting around the Milky Way.
Yeah, it's directions and different transfer points. There's
it walking or driving?
This isn't Google Maps.
Oh, okay.
There's public there's a public transit option, but that kind of assumes the privatized space system.
I love the private and public transportation options. Wait 400 years. Now you're on your way. It'll take you
wait 400 years while they build
17 generations to get there.
Exactly. Wait the time it takes for them to build the capsule that you're going to be. the bus. Is that what we call spaceships?
Interplanetary space travel is late.
That's what we call the privatized spaceships. But anyway, absolutely fantastic. He says, quote, I've reread Carl Sagan's novel about a year ago, and in the story he alludes to some sort of cosmic Grand Central Station. That, coupled with my longtime interest in transit maps, got me thinking about how to understand the vastness of our own galaxy by using the concept of transit maps. So this guy should be like in the Digital Arts and New Media program, you know, at UC Santa Cruz.
Sure.
doing this. Anyway, very, very funny picture. Going to be up on the website in about 2 minutes.
And that website is geekspeak.org, because, of course, you're listening to Geekspeak. And Al, before we switch to the mid-break, I want to talk to you about bamboo. Actually, I'd like you to talk to me about bamboo, if you don't mind.
Bamboo. Well, bamboo. There's a company out there, and Lexon, and they have a new range of bamboo and bioplastic small appliances. These are things like crank radios, calculators, you know, key fobs, controllers, clocks, things like that. And they're made out of bioplastic and bamboo, which are renewable materials.
Mm-hmm.
Bioplastic is actually a type of plastic that is, well, technically compostable. And it's usually generally derived from renewable raw materials like starch, corn, potato, tapioca. Mm-hmm.
It's sticky.
Cellulose, soy protein, lactic acid, et cetera.
They're
not hazardous or toxic in any way. And this company has come out with a full line of kind of cool-looking things. And, it kind of emphasizes the beauty of the bamboo. You know, they're just, you know, little like electronic appliances.
Mm-hmm.
So you have these, which is a great idea because you get so many of these things. You know, so many of these like radios and stuff around your house.
We're always talking about the mass amounts of materials that get thrown away. We talk about recycling like cell phones and stuff, mm-hmm. but really what we're talking about we're talking about the metals and the in some parts of it. But the plastic case, of course, gets mm-hmm. grind up and if people do it, gets ground up and melted again.
And they're actually quite attractive.
This stuff you just put it in the ground. I mean,
yeah.
At least the case.
I mean, they look good too. They're mm-hmm. they're nicely designed. Radios and little things that are, you know, they have the wood on them, and it's all, you know, I mean, this is a really great movement, I think, to just get rid of all this plastic junk.
Right.
You know.
Well, thank you very much for that update. Mm-hmm. GeekSpeak on KOSP is supported by Henry J. Ramirez, DDS in Santa Cruz, specializing in cosmetic and family dentistry using digital technology for less radiation, offering one appointment crowns and veneers. For appointments and more information, 423-2447. This is GeekSpeak. My name is Lyle Troxell. In the air with me, I have Al Luckow and Ben Jaffe. And our guest today is Dave Portera.
Dave Portera, yeah.
I'm going to mess that up every time I say it.
That's
and
okay.
You can correct
it
as much
as you want.
Sometimes.
Lyle has a problem with any kind of Portrero or Portero, or there's a road in Santa Cruz that he was not able to pronounce for many episodes.
You were pronouncing his name that whole time.
I was. Uh-huh. I knew.
And then finally we got you to say Portrero.
Such a good flow.
You didn't know that I was psychic.
Yeah. And then you pronounce his name Portrero. Yeah.
Hey, it's mid-break. Got a podcast, Ben?
I do indeed. We've probably mentioned The Moth. Have we mentioned The Moth? Or is that the one?
I
love
The Moth.
We got past The Worms.
Okay, The Moth is great. Yeah, we got past The Worms. The Moth is fantastic. So I think we've mentioned it, so I'll mention another one. I road tripped to Colorado with a friend, and she introduced me to Stuff Mom Never Told You. Mm-hmm. And it's an absolutely fantastic podcast. It's these two women who cover these various topics. What I really like about it is that they really do their research. You know, they cite their sources as they're talking about these different topics. And that's something that's a little hard to find, you know, people actually being accountable for the things that they're saying. So
yeah, so you like Things Mom Never Told You?
Stuff Mom Never Told You. It's kind of hard because when you're Googling, it could be, you know, the stuff that was never told you by your mom, or things right. your mom never told you about, but it's Stuff Mom Never Told You. That's it. And I'll also put a link up on the show page.
All right, I want to share another song. This is not exactly a theme song, but it's just too fantastic not to share.
Okay, here's the rest of the song. So you're living in a world that you don't know nothing about. Sitting at your keyboard paralyzed with doubt. Just sit tight, we're here to help you out. We don't know it all, but we'll tell you what we found out. And if it's all Greek to you, then let us speak geek to you. We're here each week for you on your radio. Helpful voices. You're not powerless, we'll give you choices. And the latest technological innovations on your local public radio station. So if it's all Greek to you, then let us speak geek to you. We're here each week for you on your radio. Miles, he's a young slacker, but that don't mean he won't work hard for you. And Lyle was raised by an old hippie, but that don't mean he ain't hip to what is new. Your basic new media architect, but you're gonna have to tune in every week to know just what that means. And Ben's just as quiet as a little mouse, but if the truth were known, he's the best looking guy in the house. So if it's all Greek to you, let us speak geek to you. We're here each week for you on your radio.
This is Geek Speak on KOSP. We'd love to get your submissions of theme songs and images for our website. If you'd like to do that, just drop us an email. We'd love to hear it, see it, listen to it. And that was from Michael Saunders. Thank you, Michael. Michael's a fantastic... Well, he does a lot of construction in the San Juan Valley area, and also does woodwork. If you need that kind of thing, contact the geeks. We'll hook you up.
Very Bob Dylan-esque.
It was.
I love the scansion of that line. Al's your basic new media architect.
Yeah, it's great.
It makes me want to drink magic tea.
Yeah. All right.
Excellent.
Well, thanks, Michael. That was just fantastic. I had a lot of fun.
The talent in this area, you know.
It's great. I mean, and I didn't know, I knew that he played guitar, you know, but I didn't know he had such a beautiful voice. And I really like his style of voice.
It's great.
All right. This is KOSP, as I said, on Santa Cruz. And we're going to do a discussion right now with Dave. And Dave, Portera?
Portera, you got it.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, see, yes. Didn't take long.
P-O-T-E-R-A?
P-O-R-T-E-R-A.
Oh, and Portera. Dave has worked on a whole bunch of video games, worked at Atari. And so what was your role at Atari?
I digitized the video, a lot of blue screen shoots. And all kinds of
things. So you're talking about the video game style that's like rotoscope, right? You like videotape an actual person moving, and then in the piece, you actually step through those frames and kind of get the style of the game from the video.
Right. So we'd start with the video shoot of, say, a martial arts person going through a certain move, and then extract frames from that. And then do things to the frame, which is make it a specific cell size, remove the background, apply a palette.
Simplify the video a bit too, so you're not doing as much data, right?
Right, exactly.
Especially at that time, you didn't have a lot of
have a lot to work with.
And what kind of apps were you using to, groom that stuff?
Well, let's see. There was we would record to Betacam, mm-hmm. not Betamax.
Betacam,
Betacam, SP, and yeah. So it was we had a really fantastic tool by a company called. Equilibrium, I believe it is. It's called Debabilizer.
Oh, yeah. Debabilizer. Sure, yeah.
Debabilizer, I think, was a very powerful tool, but it was in its infancy when we used it. Right.
Really? Yeah.
Now it just does all kinds of
I don't use Debabilizer, but I used to use it quite a bit.
Oh, yeah.
Debabilizer can make any kind of image format it can read, and it can output any format. That's a good way to describe it. And you can do a whole bunch of filters on
and
it.
And in the early days of the net, when you built web pages, you had to consider that a lot of people had 8-bit screens,
right?
So they had less color, and if you had nowadays, everybody's 24-bit, so you have this beautiful color, but 8-bit, what is it, 256 colors?
Yeah, yeah.
And so you had this like weird kind of dithery kind of look, and if you didn't groom your imagery using an application like Debabilize or something, your stuff looked really junky.
I like groom. It's very much like
yeah,
it really was. You'd take what was pretty on your screen and then kind of translate it, and as you did it, you had to play with a lot of settings to see if you could get a look that looked good.
You know what a good example of that is? Mm. Is Myst. Because Myst was designed at that time, which Myst is a game. It was a CD game. It was like Revelation, and everybody played it, and it was really hard, and most people gave up, but me included. But it was very cool, very beautiful, and what it would do is it would load the color palette, the 256 colors, as you entered a certain scene.
Every scene, right. So you only had 256, but it would be based on that on that image.
And you'd have beautiful gradients and stuff, but if you didn't do that,
right.
I mean, this is what we had.
That was the advanced steps.
This was the time. And, and you were one of the guys that were having to frustrate and pull your hair out. You have hair left, too.
Well, it's really hard to, detail with less colors. But with some of those earlier images with Pit Fighter and stuff, they still came across. I mean, there was, our animators did great work.
Were you ever the subject of the a video?
Actually, I was. And,
I remember you said you were like a drug dealer in the background character.
Actually, I think the right credit was the drunk.
Oh,
yeah. Well, I was brown bagging it on the street.
So your character had like a bag.
And my hair was down to the middle of my back at the time too. So it was great. I was slugging back that.
You looked the part.
Brown bag. I did.
So what is that in Pit Fighter?
I think it's in Guardians of the Hood.
Guardians of the Hood.
Guardians of the Hood.
Next time I see that game,
you're famous.
For it. Yeah.
Oh yeah.
You can walk in an arcade and hey. That's that guy.
Hey, he's the professional drunk.
It's all of two frames. One that, the bag is down there, and then it's up in my mouth, and it's down.
So it's 17 hours of gameplay with a guy in the background just doing a bottle.
Just drinking,
yeah.
Yeah.
That's fantastic. What it was like, kids.
Yeah, yeah.
None of this 3D business.
What have you been doing since, how long were you at Atari?
Atari Games, 5 years.
Yeah. And what have you been doing since then?
Various projects, video. For video, mostly corporate.
So a lot of video
industrials and broadcasts, some commercials and things like that. Yeah.
And are you impressed with the quality, like from Debabilizer to now, the software quality change?
Oh my God! Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, yeah. Not only that, but the advances in software and technology.
So when you're doing like that older school stuff, when you've got Debabilizer dealing with, and you're probably shooting in front of a green screen or blue screen or something like that. Was that all stuff you kind of had to hand do to then pull that data out to then make it fit correctly in the background of the image? Was it a sprite that was moving around back there, or did you? How were you layering the video in the back, or were you involved in that process?
Well, that part I wasn't involved with, and actually my understanding of that was that they were animation sprites.
Yeah.
That were
what was the software for editing the video at that time. It was, COSA?
COSA After Effects.
Yeah.
We didn't actually use COSA After Effects to do that sort of thing. And COSA, as you know it now, is Adobe After Effects.
Yeah. Right.
Still a real amazing piece of software when it was just COSA. Now with, After Effects, there's anything you can
do. Level where you were, this was the stepping stone that sort of got us to where we are now. I mean, we're looking at a lot of 3D graphics on these games and all this calculation and all this kind of stuff. But, when I especially was going to video arcades, which was in the 80s, mid 80s or early 80s, these are the games, I was seeing, these kinds of things, late 80s and then, early 90s. These were the games that you saw that had, had this long and got people into this, fighting, things and the, but it was 2D, kind of. It was 2D, mm-hmm. right? Mm-hmm. Everything was 2D. And, mm-hmm. and shooting the blue screen and all that kind of stuff had a lot more around it. Now it's a lot of this is all programmed.
Right. Animated characters. Yeah.
Well, what's interesting is you have if you look at, say, the Fast and the Furious video game, driving game, mm-hmm. and we're sitting there at the flag and you're getting ready to go, you see those jumping people, the people that are watching you go. Now, that is the type of work that was done in the early 90s.
Right, right.
Now, you mentioned the color palette. It's a lot more now. Obviously, mm-hmm. a lot more colors, maybe mm-hmm. even, the 17 million or whatever it is for.
If you want to ask questions about early video game development and video editing, please feel free to call in. The phone numbers are 476-2800. Again, that's 476-2800 or toll free at 1-800-655-5877. Again, that's 1-800-655-5877. I'll give those phone numbers just a second. In just a second, again, this is KUSP. My name's Lyle Troxel. We have Al Luckow, Ben Jaffe, and Dave Portero.
Portera.
He just can't do it.
Couldn't do it.
Just think
couldn't
of Porter with an A on the end.
Oh, Porta. No, it doesn't work.
Porter.
Portera.
Portera.
Actually, that'd be the correct Italian pronouncing.
All right. We do have a call, and actually, it's somebody you know. So we'll take him on the line right now. Faroka calling from San Ramon. Welcome to GeekSpeak.
Hi. Good morning, guys. How you guys doing?
Hey, great. Hey, Faroka. How are you? How you doing?
Pretty good.
So were you working at Atari in the early days as well?
Yeah, I was there actually a few years before Dave joined us. I was a little bit of an old-timer. I kind of started in the early 80s, long before any of the video production was sort of the precursor.
So what are some of the games you worked on?
Oh, God, so many different ones. Probably the ones that David was involved in, some of the fighting games, Bloodsport. Later on, we did a lot of games that involved driving or a simulation, if you will. Mm-hmm. It involved more of an immersion into that world.
You had to move the background fast all the time.
Yeah.
And these games...
Yeah, I was involved back when everything was 2D. I mean, we were basically pushing pixels, asteroids, and...
Were you working on asteroids?
Yeah.
Oh, very cool.
Asteroids.
In fact, I got my start at Atari in the customer service and repair department, and we used to have this room that had wall-to-wall of boards. It was sort of like an archive of hardware mm-hmm. from everything dating back to the Pong days, practically.
So rather than have a central processor in the game, you had to actually build the game out of parts of
absolutely.
Things. People are listening to this going, but don't you just put the disc in and it plays? Well,
yeah,
no, and didn't work that way.
No, and from time to time we had to go and buy out stocks of inventory from different parts suppliers just so that if we ever had some of these old things sent in for repair, we wouldn't be sitting there without the parts to fix it.
So you're talking about like the actual physical units, the switches, things of that nature. Were you ever involved in making a better design choice with the switch or something? I remember the Atari switches that across the top, you had to shake them sometimes and make them back and forth to get a big gauge.
that was actually, we had a whole department of mechanical designers uh-huh. who it was one of the more fascinating aspects of the whole spectrum of game design and manufacturing. And these guys had everything from motors to you name it. We did a lot of games that were electromechanical, things that actually moved and physically,
One of my hobbies is old 1970s pinball machine repair. So before the central processor took over, a lot of daisy wheels and things like that right before that point when you can actually play with the whole thing. I love those kind
these,
of machines.
These computer boards and all these parts and stuff, this is going to be the new steampunk.
It is.
10 years from now, people are going to be saying, hey, yeah, look at this retro-looking thing. It's not a chip. It's this green board with these things on it.
Yeah.
And if I feed more nuts to the squirrels, it goes faster.
Yeah. I remember Waz telling me one time, he actually designed the first breakout game for Atari. And what happened was, you know, there was a long story behind that, but...
Steve Wozniak, one of the founders of Apple, come on.
Yeah, and it was before he did Apple, and he was just like a geeky guy. And
He used to work at Atari, that's right.
Yeah, he did this game, and
him and Jobs.
Him and Jobs sold this game, and Atari just made tons of money off it. And at one point, you know, and then
this is
Jobs,
breakout. So this is a whole bunch of colored bricks at the top, and you've got a paddle. It's kind of like a one-person pong game. And the ball goes around, hits one of the bricks, and then you try to get the ball not to fall down below your line.
Right.
And mind you, was in black and white only.
Well, didn't you have like a colored tape? It was a black and white screen, and then they put tape on the monitor.
That's right. The very, very original one, probably the first five that were built, we had one of them in our guest room at Atari's lobby. And this thing was just a really weird-looking, like a spaceship that was like a glittery gold cabinet.
Oh, I love it.
And black and white. 14-inch screen. I mean, 14-inch. In those days, that was like, wow.
Yeah.
And then later on, they thought that this is kind of boring, so they added a film to kind of add a color dimension to that.
It was like red, red semi-clear tape, and then like a yellow semi-clear tape, and you just taped it across the top.
And right in the line where the bricks were.
So, I got to the yellow bar, but you didn't realize it's just tape. And as a matter of fact, I don't even think you were looking at the monitor. You were looking at a reverse image of the monitor on a mirror.
Most of those cabinet video games work that way because the monitor was so heavy. So you actually put the monitor down below, uh-huh. and then you've got a mirror that faces you up in the upper part of the cabinet. So the whole thing is a lot more stable.
Yeah.
And that's pretty common for video games. I think still even today.
Teleprompters work that way too. So
that's right.
Actually, it's interesting you mentioned this, but the primary reason for that was because it actually renders a smaller footprint on the cabinet. And in those days, the operators of games, they were basically renting space by the square foot. So the game value was based on how much it earned per square foot. And so if designers could produce machines that took less footprint and still made money, it meant more return on investment.
So if you had the cathode ray tube up at the user's level, then the back of it had to protrude further from the machine. Instead, if you put it downwards, then you don't have to do that as much. Oh, very cool. I always thought it was a weight stability thing. Oh, that's great. Thanks for enlightening me.
I think I might have paid a lot of salaries of Atari employees.
Yeah, actually, I did work on a video with Nolan Bushnell. We did a 20-year video, and Nolan mentioned the Pong story about how, it was at one point sounding like it was going to fail, but then he got a call from some tech people, and they said that the machine was jammed. Well, it turned out it was jammed full of quarters. and then the birth of Pong, sent Atari off. And actually, Nolan remembers fondly. He goes, man, I walked out into the parking lot after that. And he goes, man, Pong has paid for everybody's cars here. Yeah, it was kind of funny.
Nolan was the founder of Atari.
Yes.
Oh, thank you.
So,
Bushnell.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Which just another legendary figure. I know when Atari decided to do Breakout again, to do the update for Breakout, they took Waz's design and nobody could actually figure out how it worked.
We actually used color that time.
And they had to redo everything from the very start because they just couldn't actually figure out how he did it.
If you want to call in with questions or comments about video games, please feel free to do so. We know a lot about it. Have some great people in the house and on the phone to chat about old Atari. Share your memories with us if you'd like. The phone numbers are 476-2800. Again, 476-2800. Toll free at 1-800-655-5877. Again, that's 1-800-655-5877. Farouk, what are you doing now?
Oh, believe it or not, I'm working for a huge software conglomerate.
Which one?
We recently bought Sun Microsystem.
Oracle.
I'm sorry. I was driving through Oakland last night, and we were chatting about the different names of the, and I saw the Oracle name. I was like, oh, yeah, now it's called the Oracle Stadium. And I'm thinking from my childhood when they didn't have that, all the different endorsements. So you're working for the Beast.
Yep.
What do you do for them?
Oh, help them gobble up other companies.
Yeah.
Great.
I think pretty soon, though, I'm going to be out of a job because there's, you know, we run out of companies.
There's no more companies left. They've all been bought.
What do we do now?
I suggested we go buy Atari, but, you know, that's too late.
Yeah, too late. Midway already got it.
Well, let's go ahead and take somebody else on the phone. We have another person that used to work for Atari. What the heck? Kelly from Santa Cruz, and Rick's still piping her in, so I've got to wait just a second now that I did this too quickly.
I'll tell you, though, Atari, you know, for people out there who aren't understanding, Atari was the video game.
Yes.
I mean, I can remember spending hours.
It was the birth of an industry.
I can remember spending hours at Sears playing their demo version of the Atari cassette game with my friends. We would just go to Sears, and they had the TV up, and you could just sit there and play Missile Command.
Yes.
With the little joysticks, and just for hours.
I mean, yeah, yeah, definitely. All right, from Santa Cruz, Kelly, welcome to GeekSpeak. Kelly?
Yeah.
Hi, welcome to GeekSpeak.
Oh, hi.
So when did you work at Atari?
It was back in the 80s.
Mm-hmm.
I guess it was the early 80s it would have been before they capsized.
What were you doing for them?
Sounds kind of funny, but I was a writer. I wrote manuals for how to use
a tech writer.
Yeah, right. Yeah. Basically, yeah. One of those people.
Did anyone ever read your manuals for?
No.
Yeah, I don't remember any manuals.
I don't either.
Was this for the game, for the cassette game?
Don't remember.
Oh, yeah.
Tape.
Well, they actually had programming manuals. That was talking,
okay.
Not the game.
I see. Game for developers.
Yeah, sure.
Yeah, sure. Mm-hmm.
And most of the developers were potheads, so, you know.
So they were really fun writing.
Oh, it was great. It was just, you know,
so they just
hang
looked
out,
at the pictures,
stone,
basically.
And look at the newest game they're working on, and then, you know, go from office to office. There was like this golden row of offices where all the top game programmers were, what do we call it, something sweet or executive row, some game, name for it, you know.
Mm-hmm. And Kelly, do you have fond memories of working for Atari?
Oh, it was fun until the end.
When was the end exactly?
About 83, I guess. Something like that.
And then it was uncomfortable because you didn't get paid
anymore? Oh, no, I got paid. It's just the people they brought in at the end were all newbies. Because all the original people that were there were kind of left by the end.
Uh-huh.
And then they brought in all these kind of marketing guys. Hmm. Didn't really understand the gaming, you know, part of it.
Right.
And, you know, that's why they wound up, you know, with, what was it, like 400,000... Atari units and games buried in New Mexico and Albuquerque.
Oh,
and
that, you know what? I heard about that.
The dump. That was real.
Yeah.
Wow.
And then you had the mafia trying to move in on them. Warner Brothers was total mafia back in the day.
Well, I mean.
And they were just really squeezing Atari, you know? I mean, really squeezing them to tell them, you know, turn this over to us.
Yeah. Well, Kelly, thanks for the calling.
Sure.
Take care. It feels like the Santa Cruz area and just this area in general has a lot of developers.
Yeah.
And people that have been working for these. I mean, they
feel like
you bump into people all the time.
You feel like they're veterans, like, you know, somebody, you know, walking around and they, you know, you don't realize that they worked on some of these,
right,
like, legendary.
Those are some people who should get movie tickets for like $6, you know, the veteran price.
Yeah, right. I'm a veteran video game developer.
Oh, sure. Okay. Right. Yeah.
So
in Silicon Valley.
When Atari did turn over, I believe it was split into two sections. We had the Atari Corp, which mm-hmm. kept the rights to the actual home gaming unit, and then it was Atari Games, which was the video arcade and actual home cassette game portion mm-hmm. of it.
Right.
Ben, did you ever have an Atari in your home?
I don't remember.
You don't?
We had a very old gaming system. And I don't remember what it was.
I'm just curious, what color
because
was
I was too young to form memories.
It ran on coal.
It ran on coal. And it was as big as those cell phones.
It was?
I think it was bad. No, I don't. No,
black?
It was black. It was black.
Yeah,
yeah.
I think you probably had an Atari.
Yeah, I think it was an Atari.
It'd actually be cool to have an Atari game now. Just like a retro, a bunch of cartridges.
I'd love to have a stack of
50 cents at the
right next to my 8-track Boston tape.
Yeah. You don't. No, but the Atari game system, it's fun games.
Yes.
They're great.
They are.
Function.
They're action, fun, you know.
You know, of course, now you can just get, like, a paddle or a joystick that plugs in your TV, which has,
everything,
like, 50 games on it.
Everything Atari ever made.
Right,
inside the actual
controller.
Joystick.
Into the joystick, yeah.
Yeah.
Like on a chip that's glued to your pinky.
Yeah. Right. But these are the days
glued, replaced.
These are all wired replaced. Together.
What cracks me up is the people who are running OS X and they run a Windows emulator so that way they can run an emulator to run an Atari emulator, and they end up like this.
No, there's a native OS X emulator.
Is there now?
I think so.
Okay, well, I've seen something like
there's
that.
There's actually websites that do it all in Flash, all the emulation in Flash.
Yeah,
just go up and play the video games in Flash.
It's pretty amazing.
The processing power is not like, that intense. That's
I've seen sure. like a 3-recursed layer emulation scheme to run like an Atari. And, you know, of course it could keep up because...
Of course.
Yeah.
Keep up, no problem.
Everything, yeah.
I had, when I cracked my iPhone the first time, I put an emulator on there. I was playing a whole bunch of old games. It was great. I don't have a cracked one anymore. I decided my phone needs to be more stable than that.
You could put an emulator on your iPhone?
If you crack it, yeah. Pretty easy. Hmm. MAME gets on there, no problem. Speaking of phones, we haven't really talked about your Google phone. Is it working for you, Ben?
Yeah, it is, actually. Actually, some very exciting news for anyone out there who's like me and has a Nexus 1. They just released multi-touch for it. And, of course, everyone was like, come on, Google, what's going on? Why don't you have multi-touch, pinch, zoom, that kind of stuff on these phones? And, you know, there's speculation it was a patent thing with Apple or they didn't want to tread on them or whatever. Apple's kind of dissed Google, and so
sure.
Google's
so
now...
So what was like, it? Why didn't they have it?
I'm not sure why they didn't have it, but they just released the over the airwaves. This week they released an update to everyone who has a Nexus 1. So I've actually yet to install that update, but apparently
does it multi-touch?
It fixes a couple of the growing pains because, you know, there's like a 3G connectivity issue that some people experience.
Yeah. I love the stories of that when some company comes out with a product that's innovative and then later people are like, well, how are you doing that? There's a great story of Jobs and Woz showing Steve, what's the Microsoft guy?
Gates. Ballmer.
Bill Gates. The Lisa. Uh-huh. Bill, thank you. That's why I couldn't think of his last name because I gave his first name wrong. showing the mouse, and he's like, how is that happening?
Yeah,
that right. You can't do that. It doesn't. We've tried this. And of course, you see it. You know it works. It's in a different situation. Well, thanks, Ben.
Yeah.
GeekSpeak is a registered service mark of Online Tonight with David Lawrence and is used with permission. And got to get him on the show. GeekSpeak on KSP is supported by Whole Foods Market, offering whole trade roses this Valentine's Day. The roses are ethically grown with care given to both the workers and the environment. Whole Foods Market in Santa Cruz, Monterey, and in Capitola across from the Capitola Mall. GeekSpeak on KSP is also supported by the University of Advancing Technology, offering master's degree programs for geeks to become innovators of the future. Classes now forming for January. That's uat.edu/masters. And let's go ahead and play the crazy USB of the week, I think. It's appropriate, wouldn't you say?
Mm-hmm.
Let me plug it in this time, too, because I remember last time.
I love this one. Very useful.
I love the way you mix that, you know, holding your computer up to the microphone. Just the right distance.
Hello, everybody. This is Al Luckow with the crazy USB device of the week. This week's device is sure to please lots of you out there. Have you ever been somewhere like, say, the library, surfing the net, when your stomach starts grumbling? I mean, they don't have any food at the library. Or how about this? You're at the data center at your company's rented server space in the middle of debugging when you realize you just missed lunch. You can't just drop everything and leave. Well, there's good news with today's crazy USB device. It's the Japanese USB noodle strainer. Yes, this is USB-powered cookware that actually makes sumen, a type of Japanese cold noodle. Just the type of thing you want around keyboards and sensitive equipment. It's a real thing, folks. Links up at geekspeak.org.
A USB noodles cooker?
Yeah.
It's fantastic. A noodle strainer.
Yeah.
Fantastic. Yeah. Hey, and in the middle of that, of course, Farouk hung up on us. I forgot to say goodbye to him. So.
Oh.
Sorry, Farouk. Thanks for calling in. That was really cool to hear another perspective from early Atari days. Coming up next, we have the Car Guys. Car Talk on KOSP is made possible by a grant from the Holly Family Fund at the Community Foundation of Santa Cruz County, and we appreciate their support. For KOSP and for GeekSpeak, my name's Lyle Troxel. The Geeks Today, we're Ben Jaffe, Al Luckow, and Dave
Portera.
Dave, thank you so much for being here today. And
thank
also,
you for having me.
Thanks for the theme song we've been playing every once
in
a while.
You bet.
Really appreciate it.
Enjoy that.
Great. You want to participate by giving us a theme song or an image of the week, please do so. You can find out how to do that by sending us email at geekspeak.org. For KOSP and for GeekSpeak, my name's Lyle Troxel. Stay tuned now for the Car Talk, guys.